Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today and receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Check out the new PropSwap.com and use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. And we're also brought to you by Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes. Use promo code SGPNMMA to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. And finally, we're also brought to you by Odds Crowd. Are you the best NBA bettor in the United States? Odds Crowd is challenging you to prove it with their free-to-play betting contest. There's $3,000 up for grabs in their season-long contest and $200 every week in their weekly contest. Just head on over to oddscrowd.com to sign up now. And finally, before we let you get started on this episode, we do want to remind you that you should download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks, news, podcasts, articles, all of it's right in the palm of your hand. Just go download the SGPN app wherever it is you download apps.
Hello, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Up to episode 82. I had trouble finding an 82, so this one's going to go out to UFC 82, but more specifically, it's going to go out to someone who fought on that card, as well as someone who fought last night, and that will be my associate host, longtime crush, Andre Arlovsky, who TKO Jake O'Brien on the prelims of UFC 82, which took place March 1st, 2008, and he also won last night, as we predicted. So this goes out to UFC 82, a.k.a. it goes out to Andre Arlovsky. Hello, I would be the person talking to you in your ears right now. I would be Jeff Fox, and I would be the host of this here podcast. Thank you for listening and coming in, and hopefully you are all subscribed to our feed at the MMA Gambling Podcast. If not, make sure you subscribe to that direct feed so you can get this podcast immediately as it drops. Because as we've shown weeks past, we are line movers. So as soon as we say someone's going to win a fight, the line goes crazy at the bookies or wherever you make your bets. So make sure you get in on the MMA Gambling Podcast feed, and so you can get us immediately. The SGPN feed, it puts our podcast out about a day or so after we record it usually, and by then the numbers will be out of this world for whatever fighter we chose to win. So I promise that this is the podcast that doesn't need long intros anymore, and this, I seem to be rambling a bit, so let's just get right into introducing my fellow mediocre boy. We both are back to being at mediocre after last night. He would be the Danimal, the prettiest purple belt on the planet, the son of Ichabod, the Bear Whisperer, Gumby, Barney Gumble. I think that's it. Anyhow, his name's Daniel Vreeland. Hi, Mr.
Vreeland. Hey, Hey, fun note about Irish Jake O'Brien, by the way, who you just mentioned. You know, he got released after going 4-3 in the UFC. So he's 4-3, not a bad record. Do you know who those losses were to?
Nope.
Obviously, Andre Arlovski.
Andre Arlovski.
Yeah, the other two losses were Cain Velasquez and John Jones.
Yeah, so just chumps.
Yeah,
chumps, so
he
all
just
of them.
Basically lost to chumps. And he beat Heath Herring in there, too, which is pretty impressive.
He also fought, I think, Heath Herring also fought in the co-main event at UFC 82, which the aforementioned UFC 82. He beat Czech Congo via split decision. What was the main event of that night, Dan?
UFC 82?
Yes.
That's got to be like either...
March 1st, 2008, Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. They were probably doing Rich Franklin then. Rich Franklin, Anderson Silva?
No, you got half of it right. It's called UFC 82 Pride of a Champion is what it was called.
Oh, so then it was when he fought Dan Henderson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anderson Silva versus Dan Henderson. Correct. And
in
your
Ohio,
boy,
it should have been a Rich Franklin one then.
It should have been. You're right. And your boy, Andre Arlovski, fought, and he's the only one in the UFC still at this point. I guess he left for a bit, but he's the only one on this card. One of the only people on that card who's still actually active that I can think of. Let me see who else is active. I guess Czech Congo is active still.
I'm looking at that card. You're right. Czech Congo is still active. Depending on who you ask, Diego Sanchez is still active.
Is John Fitch still technically active?
God, I don't even want to think about John Fitch. Chris Lieben was on that card too. A couple of my faves.
Exactly. That was a big Dan Yul Vreeland card. Last night was not so much a big Daniel Vreeland card,
no,
was it? I don't think it was a big card for anyone, though, really. Well, I guess Jong, of course, Superfan Jong on the SGPN Slack channel, which everyone should get in on because it's lots of fun. He seemed like he had a good night, but he had the advantage over us because he was doing live betting. We have to make our picks like days and days in advance, sometimes weeks in advance, and he was doing live betting. I think that's what saved his butt last night because a lot of our preconceived notions on how things would go down didn't really happen last night.
Yeah, I'm going to half blame us, but also half blame some really either bizarre developments in skill set or complete lack of following a game plan.
Yeah, there were some, well, we'll call them outliers. How about that? It makes us look smarter. There were some outliers last night, Dan, that there were some things that, we didn't foresee happening, but we probably should break it down because it was such an exciting night. But actually, we should break down so we can get to the real main event of Sundays, which is Dan going almost perfect, 80% usually, on his picks for Dana White Contender Series. And that's what all the real hardcore degens want because that's where the money is made Tuesday nights. But first, let me tell you about WynnBET. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. Great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WynnBET. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds on every major sport, we have what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today and receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download BetWin. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. And we're brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. The MLB playoffs are in full swing, and PropSwap is your home for the best World Series futures. All season long, PropSwappers have been finding the best odds in the country because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will double it up to $500. Double the cash means double the odds. If you love sports betting, you need to be using PropSwap. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time, so your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. Thousands of bettors across the country are shopping for tickets in PropSwap every day. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. I bet everybody's trying to get a piece of the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series now, right, Dan?
I don't know about that. I don't think anybody's
superstitious.
I don't think anybody's jumping at the chance to get a ticket on an 88-win team in the postseason.
Three more wins, Dan, and then they're in the World Series. Three more wins.
Yeah, it seems wild. It doesn't seem possible, even as they weren't over 500 until August 10th this year. And that includes, That includes like 1-0 or 2-1. Like they were never once over 500.
And their best pitcher and best hitter are basically throughout the whole year, right?
Two of their best three hitters and their best pitcher. Yeah, Mike Soroka out the whole year and Ozuna out most of the year with the unmentionable activities. And then, yeah, Ronald Acuna out for half of the year with the torn ACL. So, yeah. This isn't a baseball podcast, but you're right. No. It's worth mentioning. They're doing well.
It's in the air. It's baseball. Baseball time. All right. Guess we'll have to talk about that event last night.
We're just avoiding it. Turn this into a baseball podcast for a week.
It's true. Let's just go to baseball. I went 6-4. Dan went 5-5. So we're, you know, the epitome of mediocre, which is what we usually promise you. That's 2 weeks, 2 out of 3 weeks we've been mediocre now, so I hope we're not sliding back to our old ways. I was down about just a little less than $50. Dan was down about $200 based on $100 bet per fight, which is what you at least have to bet. That's a contract you have when you listen to this podcast. But there was a big development in our betting last night. Dan, do you know what the big development was?
You passed me in the money, huh?
I passed Dan in the money, correct. So now he has nothing to hang his hat on. For the year, I'm at 58% correct picks. Dan's at 55%. So neither of those have changed. But money-wise, I am ahead of Dan by $67. We're both down money, but I'm down less. So what do you – yeah, you have to come up with some new shtick, Dan, to excuse away your poor performances and me beating you, because I got you in both now.
We got time. I'm just going to – this week on Wednesday when you're picking, I'm just going to make you pick first on every fight.
It's true. That might do the trick. All right. Luckily, we're not counting contender series. I might do all right, because a lot of times just looking at resumes, I'm like, okay, I picked that person. You would pick them too. So maybe I would do okay there, but it would be more a shot in the dark than anything else. All right, UFC Fight Night, Ladd versus DeMont. All right, let's start with the main event. We both got it wrong. All I really have to say is, what the hell was that, Dan? What the hell was that fight?
I mean, like, there's so much.
Hey, there's our first oof. Oof.
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, like, if the Aspen Ladd who fought in the, I'm going to say the fourth and the fifth round, because I don't actually think she looked all that bad in the fourth either. The fourth and fifth round, Aspen Ladd wins that fight, right? Like, she looked way better than Norman. And it wasn't even DuMont slowing down, because there would be no reason for DuMont to slow down. She wasn't pressured at any point in time in that fight. But, like, Aspen Ladd showed she was a better fighter in those last two rounds, those last 10 minutes. You know, and even if you gave DuMont the fourth, which I think two of the judges did, and all of the judges gave Aspen Ladd the last one, it was just literally her letting her hands go. And I think if she had let her hands go like that early on in the fight, I think you would have seen more takedowns open up for her. I think you would have seen her, you know, score some top position time. I think you would have seen her press DuMont against the cage more and do more work there. Like, she just didn't put any fear into DuMont and, like, just kind of ate jabs. I think they said after the first two rounds she had landed three significant strikes or something like that. It was some atrocious number. It was bizarre to me how slow she came out and how she just didn't seem to know what to do. And I don't know. Do you think it was ring rust? Do you think that could have been a piece of it?
Yeah, there could be ring rust. It could be lingering issues from the weight stuff. Who knows? Because that was just a couple weeks ago. It could be her amazing coaching that she obviously has been having.
Yeah, like, well...
People love the corner advice she was getting.
Yeah, the corner advice was seemingly bad, but I'll say this. I once had a conversation with Save Sound, the esteemed coach of Fortis MMA, who once told me that, like, the only person who knows what that fighter needs in that corner is the coach. And even if it sounds like you're not giving him technical advice, or it sounds like you're being mean to him, or – in some cases, sometimes with Safe Saad, if you physically hit them, it seems bad, right? Like, it seems dumb. Like, sure, her coach could have offered her some technical advice. But, like, you know, like, sometimes there are some of fighters that just need to be yelled at. And there are – I mean, like, you've seen that with Safe Saad before. Like, he went into the corner again with Ramiz Brahimi, and he just screamed at him one time, like, what the hell are you doing? Get up off the stool and shoot a fucking takedown. And he said it just like that. And then in the next round, Brahimi shot a fucking takedown and got the takedown and sunk in a rear naked choke. So, like, if she had come out like a bat out of hell, I think a lot of people would have been saying nicer things about Jim West's corner work. It doesn't sound great. I will say I have far more concern about the fact that that is her much older boyfriend talking to her that way than that is her coach talking to her that way. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
That obviously raises a whole heck of a lot more questions. But as far as it being, like, bad advice, I mean, he was telling her she was down and that she had to do more. Like, some people need technical advice. Some people need motivation. At the very least, he was trying to do the latter.
Yeah, I think it was more of the gender dynamic that was causing concern for people. And then you have the whole relationship thing. Plus, he seems to be not be a very likable guy. Or people seem to really pile on. Actually, both of them online, so... regardless of the, he came out and apologized, but did you hear his apology or read it?
I didn't. I just saw somebody posted he apologized, yeah. And then I saw all the hot takes on both sides, like, he needs to, he doesn't need to, like.
Yeah. Even though his apology, he said in his apology, although it probably wasn't my fault, I'll take full responsibility. So you're not apologizing then.
That's the worst one I've ever seen.
It was something like that. It was something about how it wasn't really his fault. So yeah, she looked horrible and made our pick look horrible, and she did absolutely nothing. And DeMont basically really did nothing too. And got her hand raised, which was more power to her. But it's not like I'm impressed with Norma DeMont now and think that she's a title challenger.
No, I don't think so either. It's funny. I actually think if she did turn up the volume, she may have drawn too much out of Ladd, or
yep,
drawn a lot of counters or gotten taken down. Or like, so like, I think what she did was perfect to win. Just unfortunately, it was the least exciting thing to win and certainly isn't going to do her any favors. Ranking-wise, although then again, there isn't rankings in this division, so you then have to ask yourself, nope, do you change their bantamweight rankings based on a featherweight fight? Will DuMont ever make it back to bantamweight? They both swear they're going back, which I guess makes sense when you say, you know, I don't want to stay here in a division that doesn't exist.
But you get a title shot immediately if you win a fight in that division, though.
Do you, though? Like, cause,
no,
I'm going to be honest. What's going to happen to Norma DuMont next? Like, who is she getting paired with? You know the answer to this.
Holly Holm, obviously.
She's getting paired with Holly Holm, who she was supposed to fight in the first place. And if she doesn't get paired with Holly Holm, who's she getting paired with?
The champ or Jermaine Duranemi, maybe? Or
Jermaine
no,
Duranemi. Yeah, because any woman,
what a mess.
Any woman who gets anywhere close to a title shot at either 35 or 45 first has to fight Jermaine Duranemi or Holly Holm, and will most likely lose to one of them so the other one can get their 75th title shot.
Yep, very, very true. So, I don't know. Is there much else to say about that fight? Hopefully Aspen Ladd isn't broken, because she was, like, she came out like, oh, she's broken. Like, you have to hit the reset button or something. Like, she was just circling for rounds and rounds and rounds, like, oh, something happened here. Something broke in her brain or something here. Hopefully that's not the end of Aspen Ladd as a top prospect, because she was very good there for a while.
Yeah, I don't think it will be. Like, it is her first, like, I mean, with the exception of losing to Jermaine Duranemi by, like, kind of like a weird flash knockout, it is her first loss. She is only 26. You know, women in that division can fight until they're almost 40, for Christ's sake. So, you know, I don't think she's cooked, but, like, man, there seems to be some rewiring that needs to happen stylistically or game plan wise. And usually you would say, you know, what would be a perfect way to do that is to change coaches. And that's never probably ever going to happen.
Nope. That's only one. She's 1-2 now over the last three, though. So not the greatest. Oh, her first two losses ever, but still. Yeah, we probably should just put that one to bed. No bonuses for that fight. Sorry, it was 49-46, 49-46, 48-47. DuMont, do you agree with the scorecard on that one?
Because I definitely gave Aspen Ladd the fifth. I gave Norma DuMont 1-3. I'll be honest, I wasn't watching during round four close enough, because that's right around, I mean, the Braves were like in the thick of that game, and I was like,
this is not worth paying attention to anymore. It's so bad. So, I mean, like, I looked up a couple of times and was like, because I had double screens going. I was like, I don't know. Ladd seems to be turning it up a little bit here. And then, like, the judges pretty much agreed with that. Like, one of them gave her that fourth round. So, yeah, I guess I agree with them precisely then. Like, yeah, either one or kind of that fourth round, too.
Making up for lost time, have a rabbit ears growing up. Now you're using now you're double screening it now.
Right, yeah, there. I'm big fancy. That's big fancy from where I'm from.
It's true. I watched it a little later, of course, as I always do, because someone always tends to tie me up while the actual fights are on. So thank God for PBR. But yeah, first two rounds, like, okay, I'm just gonna watch this at double speed, and I don't think I missed anything because. I could see when their limbs were going out, and it looks like they were just doing a little dance around and around and around. So, yeah, it was not a fun fight. You didn't really have to pay much attention to it. All right, how about the co-main event? You probably enjoyed this one more because we both got it right. It was my only underdog, basically, of the night. It was the -104 underdog, but it technically was underdog. Underdog struck back last night in a big way. 5 underdog wins out of 10 fights, so half the fights. Went to the underdogs in case you have trouble with math. 5 out of 10 is half. So we figured it was going to happen eventually, and it did happen last night. Andrei Arlovsky, your boy, beat Carlos Felipe, whose nickname is Boy, but it doesn't mean Boy. 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. It went pretty much the way we said it would, right? It probably was a more exciting fight than we predicted. We thought it would be rather boring. I think they engaged a bit more than we expected, and I guess Arlovsky gassed out a little less than Felipe, but yeah, it got pretty gross at the end fight. But yeah, Arlovsky does what new age Arlovsky does and got himself another win.
Yeah, I would say they did engage a little bit more. I think some of that was the pressure of Carlos Felipe. Yep. Like I had said that he would slip into whatever game plan that Arlovsky wanted to fight. And I don't think he did. He did a really good job of trying to take Arlovsky out of his game, and even did a little bit. But it didn't. And in the end, it really didn't matter, right? Because man, what a good performance by Arlovsky, especially over those first two rounds. Did you think it was? I don't know if you caught it because you sometimes are fast forwarding through stuff. Did you see Carlos Felipe clearly thought he won the fight? He was like rip shit afterwards when they read the decision.
Yes. That's one of my favorite things. Meaning it's one of the things I hate the most is fighters who are delusional and think they win fights and they have their hand up and they go apoplectic when the decision doesn't go their way. But yeah, I did see Boy do that.
Yeah, and it wasn't close either, right? Like, there's no way you could give him anything but the third round. So yeah, wild. But yeah, of course I enjoyed it. It's Andrei Arlovsky winning a fight in 2021. By the way, just out of curiosity, and I know you obviously have your performance rankings that are being updated probably at the current moment.
Yep.
For heavyweight, he's got to be a top 15 heavyweight again, right? Like, he's won 4 out of 5, which includes wins over Felipe, Lantaner, Boser, Chase Sherman, and now Carlos Felipe, and only has a loss to Tom Aspinall in there. That's a pretty damn good run.
Yeah, problem with him is he hasn't finished fights, which doesn't...
it doesn't help on the performance rankings.
It hurts him, yeah. We're talking about the rankings I do on MMA-manifesto.com, the MMA site I run. Arlovsky is still right around 24th or so. He doesn't finish fights, but still... doing a lot better than you would have expected Andrei Arlovsky to do. We wouldn't expect him to be fighting any longer, but he still is a little like, if you have a bet on him, he's a little nervous watching him fight because I expect him to get knocked out like he used to for a while there, but it doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Yeah, and shout out to us here on if you listen to our props at the end of Wednesday's episode too, we told you could get Andrei Arlovsky +200 by decision. So listen to us.
It's the only way he wins. That makes no sense.
I can't believe the odds were that good. They were silly.
The last time he finished a fight was 6 years ago. Like, how, like, it's not very hard to look those things up. I don't get why they, I don't get why, and it's not like you're betting on the fight to go the distance. You're just betting on him to win via the distance. Like, I can see if you think Felipe is going to knock him out, but I can't see how you would see the flip side of that and Arlovski knocking him out. So, yeah.
Yeah.
They're giving money away, which is fine. We can't complain about that. So we got that one right, one for one, or one and one. We got Jim Miller pick right. Well, I don't -225, so not a massive return. The fact that Jim Miller is -225 favorite in 2021 is pretty crazy too. But yeah, I don't think we saw a knockout punch coming from Jim Miller. I think I saw it was his first knockout since UFC 200.
One of the best knockouts of the year, too, I will say that.
It's fantastic.
Just, yep. I mean, like, a murderous left hand, and it just, it was one of those ones where the guy falls on top of himself, like, implodes straight uh-huh. down on top. So, like, they made him follow up with punches, despite the fact that Ghost Pepper there was completely unconscious, but just somehow he had happened to fall. It was almost like, who did Roy Nelson knock out that way? Dave Herman? Is that a real person? Am I remembering that
name? Real person.
Dave Herman, he knocked out and he just like collapsed within himself and just was like headbutted his own knee. And this was like that. Like, awesome knockout from Jim Miller. Crazy that he's still this good at this age. And to have him and Arlovski go back to back like this and just like run the clock back in like the wildest way, it was just an awesome. Awesome, like, pick-me-up on a card that was, like, not very filled with pick-me-ups.
No. And it's not like the knockout was just, like, a lucky punch. He was tagging him on the feet pretty well.
He was loading up that left hand in the first round, too. Like, he clearly saw that as an opening, either, you know, pre-fight, you know, getting ready for this fight, or, like, he located it automatically after the first round. But, like, yeah, then he was landed it in the second.
And the plan still is he's going to keep going, and he wants to make it to UFC 300 still. He reiterated, so we're talking, what, 3 years away, basically? A little less than 3 years away, probably.
I'm all about it. Let him keep going.
That would be awesome. UFC 100, UFC 200, he wants to do UFC 300. And if Brock Lesnar doesn't make it to that one, then he will be the only man to make it at 100, 200, and 300. So, that would make him, you know, just a little between 40 and 41. So it's not like he will be – like an old man, for lighter weights, it's kind of old, but still, it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility here.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. He also, one of my buddies was saying this to me earlier, was like, he's one of those guys who's been in a billion fights and like somehow doesn't seem like he's gotten like tagged a ton. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't like he's been hurt a lot, and he doesn't seem like he's been, you know, like when you're interviewing him, it doesn't sound like he can't put a sentence together. Like, meanwhile, like Arlovski's post-fight interview, I don't know if his English has gotten worse or if he was exhausted or like if there's some brain damage there, but like I turned it up. I like muted the Brave game and turned it up so I could hear Arlovski's interview, and my wife turned to me and she goes, "What did he say?" And I was like, I couldn't tell you. Like, it said, I heard the word matchmaker in there one time. I'm pretty sure he said Nike, just do it. But like, other than that, I have no idea what he said. And I like was trying to listen, and it was, I believe, English. But yeah, like just back to the original point, like Jim Miller seems like he doesn't take damage like that. So yeah, why not send him to UFC 300?
How tasty my pee-pee? Did you say that?
How tasty my pee-pee? How tasty my pee-pee? That's such a wild, wild, funny quote from back in the day. And also, I will say, it's pretty wild that those two were fighting for the title back then, and like everybody was high on Sylvia and was like, oh, Sylvia comes out on top. Like, he's clearly the guy. Arlovski's still fighting, and I think Tim Sylvia weighs 400 pounds. You know what I mean? Like, he's super enormous. Yeah. He tried to fight like 5 years ago, and like the commission on the Native American reserve in Connecticut wouldn't even clear him, and I'm pretty sure they'd clear anybody. So they were one of the few places still holding fights during the pandemic. So like crazy how far those two paths diverged.
And it's it's good news that we went with the old dogs because they both brought us in wins. So that made us, what, one out of we got 2-1 is what I'm trying to spit out over the top three fights. How do we do with the Manon Fiorot fight? Let me tell you in a minute. But first, let me tell you about Keeps. Do you have a child who compares you to Shamil Abdurakhimov? Because if you do, Keeps is probably the thing for you. Wasn't that the person that my son compared me to? I think it was, wasn't it?
I think it was Shamil Abdurakhimov, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, hey, he looks like you. Yeah.
He was the one fighting Chris Daukaus that night.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, maybe I should get Keeps. Because you know what Keeps is? Keeps offers a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. Convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months. You don't have to leave your home. Low-cost treatments start at just $10 per month, and Keeps offers generic versions. Discreet packaging and proven results. Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors. Prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see results, so act fast. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/SGP to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's keeps.com/SGP to get your first month free. keeps.com/SGP. Yeah, I don't think Keeps will help. Like, if he thinks my body looks like that, that's probably a problem. and the body hair, that's probably a problem, but I don't think Keeps makes you have hair like a gorilla, which is I think it just handles the hair on your head, but if you need it, people get the treatment to find out.
Yeah, regardless, it's a good idea if your head looks like Abdurakhimov, even if you don't need to grow his chest hair.
exactly. All right, Manon Fiorot, yes, she did come through for us. -240, she was Dan's lock pick. So for the locks, Dan is now up to 15-12. You're getting some separation from 500, which is nice. She's still down $340, but hey, we'll just gloss over that fact. But you nailed it with Fiorot. We both nailed it. It was pretty easy pick. Silva actually looked better than expected. A lot of clowning, even though she was clearly getting her butt whipped, and she still was. I guess she wanted to tire Fiorot out right till the very last second of the fight, and then she was planning on winning or something. But yeah, 30-26, 30-27, 30-27, Fiorot just is like a machine, just nonstop pressure on Silva.
I would say what she was doing with the clowning was trying to make it look like trying to anger Manon Fiorot, because I don't think she was necessarily trying to tire her out, because if she was, she'd push the pace more. Instead, she dropped her hands and put her hands behind her back and invited Fiorot to. But Fiorot is – the thing about Fiorot is she is just, like, one of the most composed fighters I've ever seen. Yeah. Like, there's, like, a weird calmness about her that makes her – it's like that – I don't want to compare her already to this legend that I'm about to do it anyway. But not skill-wise, but, like, as far as her facial expressions and the way she handles fighting, it feels very GSP-esque. Right, like, stone-faced the entire time, very calm the entire time, isn't going to let you deviate what she plans on doing, which is so impressive, especially because, you know, Silva was trying to clown her into getting into a firefight, and she didn't. She just picked her apart, and then, like, occasionally when she would put her hands behind her back, she'd be like, that's cool, I'm going to take you down instead, which is not at all what you were expecting to happen, and now you're in an even worse place to try to knock me out. So, yeah, I kind of expected her to get the finish and was a little bummed she didn't. I was really impressed with, like, all facets of her game. It was cool to get to see her use her takedowns to show, like, I'm not just a flashy kickboxer. I can do it all. So, yeah, I'm excited for whatever comes next for Fiorot.
Does she remind you of another Stoic champion, a current champion, in her very same weight class, Valentina Shevchenko? Kind of fights like her and composed like her?
Yeah, and she's patient like her and is willing to not get suckered in. Yeah, and I mean, like, people have been talking about who the young flyweight – and actually, Fiorot's not even that young. I think she's 31. At least not that young for MMA, at least. So they've been talking about who the up-and-comer is that's going to pressure Shevchenko. And I think it has to be somebody like Fiorot, right? Like, it has to be somebody – who can strike from distance and mix in the occasional takedown and, like, basically fight Valentina Shevchenko's style of game and try to beat her own game. Because we've seen women go in there and try to power punch her and it doesn't work. We've seen women try to go in and make it gritty and that doesn't work. So, like, I think we need to see somebody do this. And so I'm not selling her into that fight yet. I want to see her. She's going to have to fight a couple more times before then. But, yeah, it seems like she's on the best trajectory out of any of those up-and-comers.
This may have been the most significant fight on the card, really, when you look at tops of divisions, because featherweight doesn't have a division. This puts her right near the top. Like, in my ranking, she moved up from 7th to 6th after this performance. So she's right in the thick of things. Who would you like to see her fight next?
I think she's got to fight one of those, like, name-valued, stalwarts of the division that are just kind of chilling in there. You know, Jessica Eye or...
Lauren Murphy,
Vivian Arroyo, like, any of those women. I mean, like... Yep.
Chokagian.
Chokagian would be a really good one, although they both... yell every time they throw a strike, so that could get
bad.
Yeah, they could get pretty bad.
Like a tennis match.
I mean, like, they will probably feed her somebody like Roxanne Modafari, which is just, like, cruel and criminal. But, like, I'd like to see them push her even further up the rankings.
Yep. No, she definitely deserves it after taking on all comers and turning them back in the UFC. So, and then the opener in the main card, because we lost, Julian Marquez pulled out of his fight against Dan's favorite, Jordan Wright, right before the weigh-ins due to a non-COVID health issue. So did you hear what was going on there or not?
I still haven't heard. No. Weird. But,
Probably weight cut.
He is a pretty big guy, and he fought up at 205 for a little while. Like, he fought, I think when he fought Matt Hamill, it was up at 205.
Yeah, so we were down from 11 fights to 5, to 6, to 6, to 9, 10, how about, Dan? How many numbers did I say before I got the right one? Five,
dude,
six,
you'll
nine.
You'll get there. Five on the main card.
No. So anyhow, 10 fights. We would have got that one right, which would have made us look a bit smarter. So this is my long way of going around saying that the opener on the main card ended up being Nate Landwehr, Anaconda choking, as we predicted, Ludovic Klein in the third round at 222. This fight went exactly how we planned it, right?
It did not.
Wow.
Although I will say this. So we said that we thought Ludovic Klein would pick him apart on the counters, and I think it started that way, right?
Yep.
And then I also said in the breakdown, just to toot my own horn for a second, that I wish Nate Landwehr would go back to wrestling more and using more of his wrestling like he did when he was fighting at M1 Global. Like, he had good wrestling, but he'd rather just slug it out all the time. And I think once he realized that, like, hey, wrestling this dude might work – he mixed it up a little bit more and almost got that choke twice.
So it's your fault? You encouraged him to not be a mindless rock'em sock'em robot? It's your fault.
Somehow I don't think Nate the Train is listening to this podcast.
Choo-choo? Well, I talk about trains almost every episode, though, Dan.
You do, but somehow... I don't think he's listening to that. No, he also cuts a really good promo after a win too.
So he probably also saved his job in the UFC. You would think with the performance last night, you probably would have thought he would have been 1-3 if he lost or something like that.
He is wildly entertaining though, right?
He is.
Like,
yes.
So
now they have a reason to keep him.
He might have also gotten one more anyway. He did beat Darren Elkins too. So there's that. Yeah.
So he was a massive underdog too. We had Klein at -350. Like I said, the underdog's a bit back last night. I don't know. I guess not much else to say about that. How do we whiff on that one? We didn't think Landwehr would wrestle. I guess is how we whiffed on that one. We thought he was
dumber than he is.
Yes, exactly. Because he hasn't shown us otherwise over his UFC career, at least, right?
Right. Yeah, we're going to talk about another one in a couple of fights that we botched on that just showed us a completely different version of his own game and made us look dumb.
Let's move on to the prelims. We almost got this, the main event we almost got wrong. Bruno Blindado Silva TKO'd Andrew Sanchez, which is not surprising. That's kind of what we predicted, right? But it took him three rounds, 235 in the third round to do it. -176, that was my lock pick, so I got that right. I'm at 17-9 for locks, and I'm finally out of the red and into the black again. I'm up $13 on my locks, so hooray for me. But yeah, this fight did not go we got to the correct spot at the end. We took quite a roundabout way to get there. Andrew Sanchez wrestled Silva, made him look horrendous on his back, which makes sense because he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu and he's never been on the ground before. And he bragged about his jiu-jitsu after he won the fight via TKO punches after he got totally dominated on the ground for the 2/3 of the fight. But regardless, Sanchez wrestled him up the first two rounds and then finally Silva turned it on. Sanchez probably was a little tired by that point and he just lit him up on the feet and finally got the TKO win. And as Vitor Belfort yelled back in the day, jiu-jitsu, after he knocked someone out. So yeah, jiu-jitsu won the fight for Bruno Silva, right?
What a wild time to give somebody their jiu-jitsu black belt. And I know I've said this like a bunch on Twitter. So if you follow me on Twitter and you're sick of me talking about this, you can just fast forward 30 seconds. But like, so many coaches like plan to give their fighters their black belts after a win. Like notoriously, one of my favorite ones is Randy Couture got his black belt for submitting James Toney, which was like, come on, dude. Like, Great. Like no offense, but Juicy Jeff Fox could have submitted James Toney in that fight. And I don't know if you've ever taken a jiu-jitsu class in your whole life. But Randy Couture got his black belt then. And I was like, all right, at least he went out there and got, like, his first submission win in, like, 10 years or something like that. He had probably really been working on that arm triangle choke because he knew it's what was going to end the fight. And he hit it, right? Like, he did what he was supposed to do, working on a skill that he had been worked on. Sure, give him his black belt. He wins by submission. This dude went out there and looked as bad as he has ever looked in his whole life grappling. Knocks a dude out who had just gotten tired out from literally grappling the hell out of him. And then they were like, now's the time. And again, I know they probably planned it ahead of time, but you can't watch that happen and be like, okay, now we're going to give it to him. You just have to think to yourself, like, okay, maybe he gets it when we get back to the gym, because now's not the time.
And he bragged about his jiu-jitsu after also, which was the icing on the cake, if you ask me.
It was so bad.
Fantastic. So we got it right, though, so we'll go with that. We did not get the next one right. This one we can be a little salty about, maybe. Judges might have screwed us here. Ramazem Emiev, -300, we lost. He lost his fight. So it wasn't just underdogs coming through. It was some big underdogs came through. Daniel Roberts beat him via split decision. Listen to this. Listen to these scores. 29-28, 28-29, 30-27.
Gotta love when they're that consistent.
Mm-hmm. Consistently bad. So who do you think won that fight?
So I think, first of all, I'll say 29-28 is pretty much defensible in either direction from the, right. Because I thought clearly Roberts won the third. I thought you had maybe an argument for the first, probably not the second, but like your argument from the first is mostly that like his attacks off of his back were good enough to steal the round, but I don't think they were. And if you go on MMA decisions, every single MMA media member had it for Ramazan Emiev, with the exception of two guys from, do you want to guess what site both of those guys are from?
Sherdog?
Yeah, they're from Sherdog. How did you know? The champions.
That's the champions. New place you crap on.
They're the champions in scoring fight. Dude, like their fight scoring is some of the worst fight scoring I've ever seen. I will say two out of three of their fight scoring guys gave it to Danny Roberts, whereas one, Keith Chilean, gave it to Emiev. So shout out to Keith Chilean for being the only not crazy person judging fights for Sherdog. But did they just hire
Sean
Sheehan? Yeah, Sean Sheehan, who's like the go to like scorecard media member right now. Like he's the guy who understands the rules better than everybody. He needs to replace the Sherdog guys in scoring fights because man, are they bad at it. That's a pretty good indicator that like Roberts probably shouldn't have walked away with that fight, but I am also not like wildly offended by it. I think like he fought well enough that giving him the win isn't too ridiculous.
So how do we get this run wrong, Dan?
I mean, he was Roberts really
good. Wrestling was better?
His wrestling was really fucking good. When did he learn how to wrestle? And even when he wasn't wrestling, his sub skills and his scrambling, I mean, it was like through the roof. Very clearly, he went in there with a game plan to deal with somebody like Ramzan Emiyev. And I would say, regardless of whether or not you think he executed or he won the fight, he executed the game plan really, really well.
Yeah. Very, very true. And we also didn't get the next fight right, which once again, I think for the same reason, we didn't realize that Lana Carolina could wrestle, or at least defensively wrestle, because she beat Lupi Godinez 29-28, 29-28, 29-28. Size was a huge factor here because she was way bigger than Godinez, and her defensive wrestling actually was what won the fight for her.
Yeah, well, and I will say this. You're right, defensive wrestling to an extent, but I think your first point is the bigger point. The size, I think, was a big issue.
That had to have been more than 4 inches. Like, she's only 4 inches taller. It seemed way more than that to me.
Yeah, and regardless of what it actually was, or even if it was that, like, Godinez weighed in at 121, which means she probably didn't cut any weight. You know, she was probably arriving to fight week the week before, trying to make sure she only had to, like, cut 6 or 7 pounds of water weight. So she didn't have enough time to put much more back on, which I think, you know, like, maybe she could fight at 125 and not be all that bad, but this was too quick of a turnaround to do it properly. And the weight and size is just too much for her. So I'm going to blame it mostly on that. Like, she was not as big as I thought she was going to be. And hard to take people down when you're that much smaller.
No, it's true. So that's another big underdog came through, because Godinez was minus 265. Got the next one right. Dana Batgarel minus 190. Won very quickly via knockout over Brandon Davis, a TKO, elbow, and punches 2 minutes in. Pieced him up on the feet. Pretty much we predicted he would outclass Brandon Davis here.
Yeah, he's just faster. And what we said before, he's faster and he hits harder. That's it.
That's all you need, basically, to win fights. And then in the curtain jerker, the opener, this is where I got separation from Dan. I won this, Dan lost this. Ariane Carnelosi, minus 165, I hit it. Noons plus 130. Dan missed it. Carnelosi won via submission, rear naked choke, third round, 257. How'd you miss in this one, Dan?
I think if Estela Nunes had a little bit more gas in that third, and defended the takedown just a little bit better, I actually think she was getting the better of Carnelosi on the feet. On just about every judge's scorecards, they all gave her the second round. She looked good. She was countering exactly the way that I thought she would. I think just maybe underestimating the wrestling of Carnelosi again. She hadn't used a lot of it in previous fights, similar to Danny Roberts or Nate Landwehr or stuff like that. Like, it's not often I am missing people's wrestling, but it seemed like that was the theme of the night here, is that Carnelosi, Roberts, and Nate Landwehr all suddenly could wrestle in a way that I wasn't quite ready for.
Yeah, that's true. That was we did, for the most part, overlook people's wrestling ability or wrestling progress, at least. You know what you shouldn't overlook, Dan, though? You should never overlook prediction striking, how fun it is, right?
That's correct.
Segway. Do you wish you could have had stock in a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Christian McCaffrey? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. Don't just bet on your favorite players. Start investing in them. Simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code SGPNMMA. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performance and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in the game. Sign up with promo code SGPNMMA to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. Also, we're brought to you by Odds Crowd. Are you the best NBA bettor in the U.S.? You can prove it on Odds Crowd, and they're free to join and play fantasy basketball betting contests. There's a season-long NBA contest with $3,000 in cash up for grabs, as well as a weekly $200 contest. Here's how it works. Once you enter a contest, you track your bets against real odds and lines, much like you would with any pick tracking app. The most profitable players will rise up the leaderboard. If you have the highest profit at the end of the contest, you win. And Odds Crowd isn't just a fantasy betting contest. It's a social app for sports bettors, free to download. You can live group chat with other bettors, track your bets, set up private fantasy contests with your buddies, and much more. So download the app for free or go to oddscrowd.com today. And if you're downloading apps, download the SGPN app if you haven't already. We are now live in the App Store and Google Play Store, and we give easy access to all our picks and podcasts. And if you are going to download it, make sure you give us a fantastic review on the in the App Store. All right. Let's put that card to bed. Bonuses. Jim Miller, 50K. Nate Landwehr, 50K. Bruno Silva, 50K. Dana Batgirl, 50K. So everyone could have used that money. I'm sure Jim Miller could use that money also, but he's already making some decent dough. Any issues with any of the bonuses?
No, I think I like all of them. I wouldn't have minded Carnal Hosey getting one. She looked, yep. You know, like that was a pretty good submission. And like I said, if that fight stays on the feet for the third, she might wind up losing a decision there. So that was kind of fun. But no, I don't think you can hate on any of the those finishes getting bonuses.
Nope. Yeah, I guess Carnal Hosey was the only finish who didn't get a bonus, right? Because they gave out four performance points. I think there was five finishes last night.
Mm.
Something like that?
Yes.
Disagree.
Correct. Yeah.
Am I correct? Are you?
I feel like there was one. I feel like there was an extra finish too that we're not remembering.
Fine, I'll go back.
You're not Baccarat. Yes. Oh,
no,
he
got the
bonus. No, he got
one.
Two,
three, four. Yeah, five. So she's
the only one. So she's the only one who did. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind her getting in, but I think they gave it to the four best.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on because that was a kind of a card and. The week before was kind of a card. Next week's card, a little bit better. At least the main event, we got Costa versus Vittori. At least we got a top of the division fight, Paulo Costa versus Marvin Vittori. Anything else on this fight card that excites you, Dan?
Yeah, there are a couple of real bangers on this one. Alex Caceres and Sungwoo Choi should be really fun to watch. Jesse Rose Clark versus Jocelyn Edwards should be fun to watch. Jung Yong Park, the Ninja Turtle, versus Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. Both great nicknames and kind of like dark horses in the middleweight division. They've both been really good. Kama Worthy's fighting. Jeff Molina's fighting. Tabitha Ricci has got really fun jiu-jitsu skills, but had like the unfortunate task of having to debut on short notice up a weight class against Manon Firo. So it'll be cool to see what she can do in a second fight in a weight class that she actually belongs in. So yeah, there's lots of intriguing ones here. Of course, we're all looking forward to UFC 267 and UFC 268 the following two weekends, which are both bonkers cards, especially 268. But yeah, like Costa Vittori is just a fun fight to think about.
Oh, they're back-to-back weekends, really. I didn't clue in on that, so okay. 267, yeah, 267 is the 30th, and then, oh yeah, they're doing 268 the very next weekend, right? Very, very exciting, but yeah. And we got, is Ike Villanueva, does he count as a chunky guy when he's at light heavyweight, or?
He does, I think.
Okay, so we got a chunky guy, too, so.
Yeah, and is Nick Romano a chunky guy? I can't remember.
No, just looked him up. He's got abs, so no, definitely.
No.
Yeah. Well, we're in a bit of a slump for the chunky guys. We get them sprinkled in here and there, but chunky
probably
guys are Canadian.
Probably why we're in a pick slump.
Maybe, yeah. Well, I was going to say chunky guys.
We had a chunky guy in the contender series, and that worked out great for us.
Uh-huh. But yeah, next weekend we have chunky guy plus we have a Canadian in Randa Marcos. So there you go. So we're going to be back on track. We should move on to the contender series because that's where. Dan has excelled this season of the contender series. He went 4-1 again last week. We're up to week 8, sadly, which means there's going to be two more weeks after this one. Thoughts on week 8 before we break down the picks? Thoughts on like the strength of the fighters on it and the matchups and stuff like that?
If you took the main event off of it, it would be very weak, and I might not give a contract to anybody.
Okay, well, yeah, there we go.
So there's my glowing recommendation for the day.
Yep. That's all right. We can still make money on it, right? Does not matter. Let's start off with bantamweights. Pedro Falcao. There was another Falcao that used to fight in Miguel or something that used to fight in Bellator, was there not?
I think he used to fight in WEC, didn't he?
Oh, yes, correct. I don't know if these people are related or not.
He fought Shale Sonnen, if I'm not mistaken. I think he beat Shale Sonnen.
Yes, that sounds right. He's fighting James Barnes, this Pedro Falcao. Barnes nicknamed Mooka, and Falcao's nickname is Pedrino, which means little stone, for those of you keeping track at home. So that's are you familiar with everyone on the fight card? I assume you are. All 10 fighters you've seen fight?
Yeah, there were I think two or three of them who I had to like do some digging because I had not seen them fight. But like I've seen them all now at time of talking. But I would say I think there were 7 or 8 who I had already seen at some point in time, and then 2 I had to dig on.
All right. So we have James Barnes, Muka. He's 14-4 with 2 knockouts, 11 submissions. So we know what he's going for here. He's been knocked out 3 times himself, so 3 out of his 4 losses have come via knockout. He's won 3 straight fights via submission. He was in Bellator for 5 fights where he went 2-3. He used to fight at featherweight. I believe this one's at bantamweight. I think I got that right. 2 inches taller than Facau, plus 165. Pedrino is 14-3 with 5 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's won 3 straight fights. He's not fought since September of 2020. He's 10 years younger than Barnes, minus 195. Thoughts on this one?
I think this is one of those ones where you jump on the line as quickly as you can for Falcao. Barnes is not good at MMA, in my opinion. He's one of the ones who I'd already seen fight. I once watched James Barnes fight. It was in a promotion called WFC. It was WFC 119. At WFC 119, which I believe was on like a free YouTube fight, he fought a guy by the name of Matt Betzold in the main event. Okay, Matt Betzold was 9-10 at the time. And Matt Betzold most famously in the main event for that fight on short notice and also sporting one leg. Which is pretty important to the breakdown that I'm about to give you. Matt Betzold only has one leg. He does have two thighs, but he only has one knee and then obviously one shin, one foot. So he fights off of one knee and then like kind of on the like just thigh. And he easily took James Barnes down, like easily took James Barnes down and controlled him for the entirety of the first round and won the first round of that fight, only to have James Barnes like get a reversal in the second round and wind up rear naked choking him. But like a dude with one leg took this guy down, a dude with a losing record in one leg took him down. And he's going to be fighting a guy who's got like a big blast double and like good grounded pound and great control out of Nova U now. Like, Take Falcao as many times as you can.
And I was thinking of, I found that Miguel Falcao, he fought in the UFC for at least one fight and Bellator for a bit. Did not fight Chelsun. I think you're thinking of Pedro Filho.
Oh, I am thinking of Pedro Filho. Yeah, he was a WEC champ. Am I wrong?
Paulo Filho. I'm sorry. Paulo Filho. I'm getting my names right. Yes. He's got a face tattoo now, so yeah, that's all you need. All right, so Pedro Facau is the pick. Jump on it. If you're subscribed to our main MMA gambling podcast feed, you will know to jump on it immediately. Maybe you can get on it. Well, what's the highest you would take this fight at? What number?
I mean, I think he's playable in a parlay up into like -400, basically. Like he's going to beat James Barnes. I feel very confident about this pick. So I mean, like get it on its own as early as you possibly can. But if it slips later, it's like still a nice piece for a parlay. Or I mean, like, I guess you could pick Falcao by finish. That might not be the dumbest thing either. But, you know, I'm less confident in the method of which he's going to win in knowing that he's just going to control James Barnes, who is both not really good and really old.
Yes, 10 years older than
39 years old. I'm a contender. Like, wow. He's
a contender for sure.
Yeah,
he is a contender.
This is one of the weirdest dudes on the contender series I've ever seen.
No doubt, no doubt. All right, let's jump way up to light heavyweights. Armin Petrosian, another famous last name. He actually is the brother of that other Petrosian. Why am I forgetting his name now? Come on, Dan, jump in.
There's another Petrosian?
What? How is Dan not knowing these things and I am? Yes, Georgi Petrosian. He fights in Bellator, I think. You don't know Georgi Petrosian?
Oh, is he the kickboxer who just got his face kicked in?
I believe he's a kickboxer. Did he just get his face kicked in? Maybe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was the guy who. I could totally be wrong. I think he just got knocked out in like a one kickboxing fight, and it was really, really devastating.
Yes, Correct, he did, yes.
And
yes,
that, that was like 2 days ago or something like that, and he's like,
yes, it was, yeah.
In
yeah,
the surgery. Yeah. Oh, man, that's possibly bad for Armin here.
Yeah. Don't worry, he's got another fight scheduled already for December, even though he just got his face kicked in. So, yeah, so that is, I thought he fought, maybe I just know him from kickboxing, even though I don't watch kickboxing. I thought he fought in Bellator, but nonetheless, what we're talking about is brother. His brother would be Armin Petrosian, who also is a kickboxer, but he also dabbles in MMA. He's a light heavyweight. He's fighting Kilian Kolev. No nicknames. So let's just jump right into it. Petrosian, 5-1 with 5 knockouts. All of his fights have come via knockout. He's won 1 straight fight via TKO. He is a professional kickboxer. His record is 70-21-1. He's an inch taller than Kolev, plus 235. Kolev, 10-0, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. He's won 2 straight fights via TKO. However, he has not fought since August of 2019. He's 2 years younger than Petrosian, minus 160. Let her rip.
Oh, I thought you still had more to go.
Nah,
so,
that's all I got to say.
Oh, okay, so that we're just going to leave that pause right in there. I'm not even going to shorten it up. So I actually like Petrosian in this fight. Despite the fact that he's coming in as an underdog. But what I will say about Kolev,
Kilian Kolev.
What I would say about him is that he is a really piss poor striker. He's not very good on the feet at all. He's got some like TKOs and rear naked chokes and stuff like that. The opponents he's fought are truly awful. Like, if you watch that last fight of his, which was 2 years ago, by the way, he's fighting a guy making his pro debut, and you can just see in the guy, way the guy is boxing, he has no idea what he's doing. The guy he fought before that was 0-4. He just doesn't seem to have very good striking, and he does have good wrestling, but Petrosian has kind of defended against some good wrestlers before. Like, I watched one fight with Petrosian where he got taken down pretty regularly, but, like, never let the guy settle in. And then after a while of, like, just fighting that guy with that style, stood up, kicked the dude once in the body, and he crumbled. And, like, that's what I'm going with right here on these odds, is that, like, I just think at some point in time, Petrosian is going to be on the feet with this guy and just piece him up. So getting a big underdog money here with Petrosian, what was the number you quoted me at?
Plus 235. So that's
pretty much. I love that. Yeah, definitely get Armin Petrosian plus 235. I'm about it.
Wow. All right. Dan knows what he's talking about in these cases. So just blindly follow him like a lot of people do in the Slack. So there you go. Light heavyweights, Caio Bojalo. He's Brazilian versus Jesse Murray. We just saw Bojalo fight in week 5, and he's back again. He's fighting Hollywood Murray, though, Dan. He's Hollywood, his nickname is. So look out. Look out. He actually was just on the Top Turtle podcast, was he not? I believe I remember hearing Jesse Murray talking.
He was indeed, yes.
Was he the gentleman with all the stories, or was that the guy before?
No. That's the guy we're going to talk about in our main event. No, Jesse Murray was not that, no.
Yes. All right. He's Hollywood, though, even though this is the guy that fights out of Ohio, right?
He does fight out of Ohio. That's correct.
Hollywood, Ohio. He's 8-3 with one knockout, 4 submissions. He's been knocked out himself 3 times, so all of his losses have come via knockout. He's won 3 straight fights. He hasn't fought since February 2020. He's 5 inches taller, 5 inches of reach over Ohio, and he's at plus 350. And I mentioned Ohio. Yeah, he's fighting Ohio, and he's from Ohio. Strange. He fights a... fights out of Stipe Miocic's gym. Does Murray. Ohio, 9-1 with 1 no contest, 3 knockouts, 3 submissions, never been finished in a fight. He was, like I said, on week 5 of the contender series where he won but did not get a contract. He's won 6 straight fights. He's gone 9 straight without losing because he has a draw in the middle of there. He used to fight at middleweight, or he fought in his last fight on the contender series at middleweight. This one is up at light heavyweight, hence the huge size discrepancy here. And he's at minus 200. Pause.
Yeah, I'm – pause. I'm going to go with Ohio.
Okay.
I think – so it's like an interesting question to wonder about whether or not a wrestler will deal with Ohio better than Aaron Jeffrey did, because Aaron Jeffrey did not deal with his weird karate style, right? Like I think I said Blahio is like a less polished Loyola Machida in terms of style. And that plays really well against a guy like Aaron Jeffrey. It's an interesting question to ask if this wrestler is going to, like, a wrestling style is the right style to, like, break that. Because that was always the question about Machida, right? Can the wrestling style sort of break that down? I think it could, but I don't think Jesse Murray is the right guy to do that just because I don't think he's going to work his hands well enough that he's going to get close enough to shoot his regular takedowns. Like, the distance management is going to be really hard for him here. I think Blahio, even coming up a weight class here to 205, is not going to have a hard time with Jesse Murray.
All right. Take that, Jesse Murray. That's what you get for going on the Top Turtle MMA podcast. Dan buries you the first chance he gets. So
he is a really nice guy. His striking against the karate style is probably not for me.
Yes. All right. Women's straw weight is the co-main event. Sherdog has it as the main event, but Dan crapped over Sherdog, so we're not going to go with Jesse, right?
No, of course not. They're wrong about it. So
Dan won't be getting hired by Sherdog anytime soon if they listen to this podcast. All right. Valeska Machado versus Piera Rodriguez, I'm going to say. I'm going to say Rodriguez for everyone, Rodriguez.
But she's not Brazilian, though.
Isn't she? She's
from Venezuela.
All right, fine. Rodriguez. Both these ladies have like four or five names to their full name, but we'll just go with those shorter names. La Fiera is Rodriguez. Do you know what that means?
The force, right?
The beast is what I saw a translation as, so I don't know.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I'll allow that. Yeah.
And then Machado's nickname's Tina Black.
Yeah, she actually goes by Tina Black most of the time.
You know what that means, Dan?
Tina Black. That's what I thought. She goes by that as her like full name most of the time. Yeah, like she's listed as Valeska Machado on Tapology too, but most of the fights I've seen her announced as Tina Black, which I don't know how she got that that moniker, but that's who she is. So she's Tina Black.
Can I be Tina Black? I love that.
I'm pretty positive you can't be Tina
Black. Oh, please. I got so many nicknames. I want to add one more. Tina Black. All right. Let's tell you about Ms. Black. She's 8-2 with one no contest. Half of her wins come via knockout, so that would be four. Never been finished in a fight. She's won six straight fights, four straight via TKO. She's not fought since July of 2020. She's an inch taller, has an inch of reach, and 4 years younger than Rodriguez, plus 260. Rodriguez, the forest or the beast, you take your pick. She's 6-0, five knockouts. She was the LFA champion. She won via TKO her last fight, which was for the championship, strawweight championship. She's at minus 325. So is she the beast here, Dan?
Yeah, I think she's the beast here. I'm going with Rodriguez. I would say as far as the odds go for fights, I have this a little bit closer than the odds do. I don't think Tina Black's that much worse than Rodriguez. But Rodriguez is a little bit faster. She's a touch better with her footwork when it comes to pressure. I think if either fighter is going to take the fight down, which I sort of don't think either is, but if either is going to take it down, I think Rodriguez is the one who will do it and be successful. And the big thing that's swinging it to Rodriguez for me in this fight is the cardio. Like, Tina Black comes out, like, very jumpy and, like, moving and really super light on her feet. And usually within 3 or 4 minutes, she is no longer light on her feet. Like, she's almost bounced the energy out of herself in one round. And for me, that's a huge worry in this fight because Rodriguez, like you said, she was the LFA champion. Not only did she win the LFA belt, but she did so in a fifth round TKO. So she was, like, motoring through four hard rounds against a really good fighter in Svetlana Gotsik. So, like, she is able to go the 25 minutes, whereas Tina Black looks like she sometimes can barely go around before she starts to turn into a different fighter. So, for all of those reasons, I like Rodriguez better. But again, I will say, I think this fight is a lot closer than the line. I'm not jumping all over Rodriguez's line here.
Okay, but we force him to make a pick, the proverbial gun to the head, and Rodriguez is the pick. All right, main event. So this is clearly the best fight in the card in your eyes?
Yes, these are, okay. I mean, like, if other than Kai Blahio, who I think probably should already be in the UFC after beating Aaron Jeffrey, other than him, these are the winner of this fight would be probably the only one who I would be like, ooh, put them in the UFC. Because, like, you know, Falcao is going to look good enough to get into the UFC because he's going to beat a 39-year-old dude who got taken down by a man with one leg. This is the only, like, contender series super worthy fight.
Do you think that's what Dana and the and Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby say when they're watching the fight? Did they go, ooh, put him in the UFC? Do you think they say that?
I don't think they talk to each other anymore after last week.
That's right. Ooh, I like that. You went, ooh, put him in the UFC. All right, welterweights. Solomon Renfro, Johnny Parsons. We got some good nicknames here. Well, the Black Dragon's kind of for Renfro, but we got the Sluggernaut for Parsons.
He also sometimes goes by the Paradox.
Yes, the Paradox. Yeah. Of course, Dan knows these things. Yeah. Of course. All right, let's break down Parsons first. He's 6-3 with 5 knockouts. 2 out of his 3 losses have come via being knocked out, though. He's won 4 straight fights, 3 straight via knockout or some form of TKO. He's at +240. The Black Dragon, Solomon Renfro, 8-1 with 2 knockouts, 1 submission. He's won 2 straight fights via knockout, 5 inches of reach, 6 years younger, -110. There's only a couple books that have these numbers posted. One of them has it much. One of them has it basically as a pick 'em, -110, -110. The other one has it much larger for Renfro. I believe Renfro was the one that you said jump on as soon as you can. Yeah, I see him at -300 at some books, so it depends on where you're looking. So.
Yeah,
I'm assuming you love him at 110, right?
Yeah, I love him at 110. But, yeah, I think if you're listening to this on Sunday night, I think you're going to have a tough time getting -110. They listed this fight to start at even money, which is why I mentioned last Wednesday, jump on Solomon Renfro as quickly as you can. He's a guy who I think is only – it only opened there because of that, like, loss to Mike Malott that I mentioned that was fresh on people's mind. Where he got stunned and then submitted, and as we learned, Mike Malott can do that to people. He's pretty freaking good. But Solomon Renfro, despite the fact that Johnny Parsons is Syndicate's MMA striking coach, is not as good of a striker as Solomon Renfro. Like, Renfro throws he is absolutely what you want out of a very good striker. He's also much stronger than Johnny Parsons, and more importantly, he's tighter with his defense. One of the things you'll notice about Johnny Parsons is he leaves himself open to counters kind of way too much for my own liking, and especially too much for my liking against a guy like Solomon Renfro, who can just turn your lights out. So, yeah, I think Renfro here, and I'll say this, I think Renfro by knockout.
Ooh, there you go. Degens, you love your – you love your props and your parlay. So there you go. Renfro via knockout. That's a big one. All right. You got any other props or parlays you want to give the Zhong Lees of the world?
So I will say, Solomon Renfro by knockout will probably make that line juicier. Because if you missed out on the -110 that it might've posted at on some books and you're now staring at -300 and you're kind of bummed out about it, that's how you can make yourself feel better. Get Renfro by knockout. I will say just play straight up Armen Petrosian cause he's, like you said, +230 in some books or +235. I think that that's just straight up worth playing. And then I would say if you're looking for a parlay to play, I would stay away from Pierre Rodriguez, but I like Kai Bohio. The -200 or whatever number you officially quoted me at is it's a highish one. So if you can get him and Falcao, especially as Falcao's number continues to balloon, because I bet you that's one of those ones that's -600 by fight time. So get Falcao and Bohio together, and I would say that that's a decent parlay to play.
All right, the parlay to play, that would be a good thing to do on our podcast, don't you think?
That would work. Yeah, I could do that.
Or is it someone else where you do the parlay to play?
I mean, I think he uses that phrase, but I don't think it's officially. I don't think it's officially branded.
No, it's not your favorite part of the podcast. No,
it is my favorite part of the podcast, or at least tied for it.
At least tied. I love my top turtle references. All right, we did it. Folks, we got you all your winning picks. Oh yeah, which fight are you getting wrong this week, Dan?
If I'm getting one wrong, I think the Tina Black one is probably the trickiest one. I will also say there is a chance I get the Armen Petrosian one wrong. Like that could be my 1-2 because here's what I'll say about that fight is I am first of all taking a big underdog, but second of all I'm trusting that the other guy goes in with either a bad game plan and strikes with him for too long or isn't able to hold him down. There's totally a chance that Kolev just holds him down for 15 minutes.
Okay.
The other three, I'm pretty confident in. I think Falcao, Bojaio, and Renfro are all pretty much slam dunks.
All right, there you go, y'all. I think we told you all you need to know. We didn't mention all the ugly stuff that's happening in MMA, you know, people punching people and domestic abuse and all that nonsense. We stuck to the good stuff, the actual fights in the cage and betting your hard-earned money on it. So we will be back on We'll be back on Wednesday because today is Sunday. We'll be back on Wednesday to break down actually a better fight night card, an appetizer to the two big pay-per-views coming up. One of them not actually you don't actually have to pay for. So we'll get you all your picks for that, and we will tell you what fight Dan got wrong on the Contender Series on Tuesday when we come back on Wednesday. In the meantime, Twitter, I'm at Jeff Fox Writer. He's at Gumby Vreeland. Read all our stuff at MMA-Manifesto.com and, of course, at SportsGamblingPodcast.com. I think that's it. Dan's going to take you home. We'll see if he screws up this time.
I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He is Jeff Tina Black Fox.
Yeah.
We will catch you on Wednesday.